It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Cody Gerlach, Director, Strategic Sales, Commercial Grain for Bar Chart. But first, it's Craig Turner, Senior Risk Management Consultant with StoneX.
If you look at it just on the surface, it is a Canada-China issue, but it is lumped in with the United States. And as we just recently we're hearing about a trade deal being put together between Carney, the Canadian premier, and China here, and it has a lot to do with the trade relations between the three. Geopolitically, it has a lot to do with China's response to what the United States was doing in Venezuela. Now they're going to come here into Canada and make nice and, be an economic partner with Canada. So, in the United States' hemisphere. So it's not just a Canadian-Chinese issue.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Cody Gerlach. Cody is Director of Commodity Grains, Strategic Sales, Commercial Grain. You get a long business card here for Bar Chart. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony.
Okay, a little background about you and your pathway to Bar Chart. Did it start in ag?
So I grew up a cattle guy, Hereford cattle, got to plug the red, white face cattle. So grew up showing cattle and then went to Abilene Christian University, got an ag business degree there. Started off in the grain trading, grain merchandising world with CGB for about 10 years, kind of got to see a bunch of parts of the United States and learn some of the nuances around cash grain in a bunch of different areas. And then in doing that, I decided to marry a Midwestern girl, got back to Iowa where she's from, and now I joined Bar Chart here about 3 years ago. And been working with grain merchandisers, traders, brokers, advisors, and helping them with all the market data needs that they have.
Okay. So you mentioned cash in there. So let's talk cash grain prices and what are you watching right now?
Yeah, so we saw the board sell off pretty hard this week after the USDA report. So obviously, cash prices across the country have definitely taken a downturn over the past week or so. I think basis levels are going to be very interesting to watch over the next few months. I think the commercial end user, the grain buyers, the feed mills, the ethanol plants, they all got quite a bit of coverage on that rally that we saw kind of late fall. And I think they got coverage for several months out, and we kind of saw basis pull back at a lot of those end user facilities, the ethanol plant, the soybean processor, once they got that coverage. Now, we're starting to also see those margins, ethanol margins, soybean crush margins are starting to retract here a little bit. So you're maybe not going to see those end users get as aggressive on a front end needs basis. So what I'm going to be watching is just to see if we do get any short pops here in basis for whether it's logistical needs or just crush needs at a particular elevator. I'd be taking advantage of those basis pops as you see them, because I think it's going to have a hard time rallying basis until we really get into the spring and summer months.
All right, so let's plow this out a little further. You started this with a change on something that happened on a Monday, and that was a data dump from USDA. WASD report in there. We had a production report in there. We had the wheat seedings report in there. Man, what a way to shake up a market.
Yeah, I think the USDA kind of threw everyone a little bit for a loop on Monday. If you looked at analyst expectations prior to that report, we were seeing U.S. corn yield anywhere in the 182 to 185 range was kind of where most people were lined up. And then when the USDA prints a 186.5 and then also increases acres when nobody really had that in the cards, it definitely spooked the market. And I thought we were going to go limit down for a little bit. We didn't. The market was able to recover a little bit the next day, but it was still a big hit to a lot of people's pocketbooks who were still sitting on unsold corn. So it's something we got to watch. It's something we got to continue to take in mind as we're looking towards planting intentions for this next year for both corn and soybeans. Are we going to see soybeans come and win out a few more acres, or are the U.S. farmer going to plant another 95 million acres? Well, yet to be seen, but it's going to be a fight for acres, I think, this spring for sure.
Cody Gerlach is Director of Strategic Sales Commercial Grain with Bar Chart. I'm Tony St. James, and this is the Agribusiness Report.
let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Cody Gerlach. You know, we look at markets, and I think a lot of times we look at it from the perspective of a producer. But there are others along the way who have to rely on those, including like elevators as well. What are some of the pressures that they might be facing right now, especially in this time of uncertainty, coming off of a huge crop, and what could be coming?
Yeah, I think, as a commercial grain elevator, I think there's still plenty of opportunities out there. We're looking at fairly wide carries across the grain space. So whether that's wheat or corn, there's some pretty good carries in the market. So if a grain elevator is disciplined, buys their grain right, they could potentially have some good carry revenue from holding that grain in their bins and shipping it at later times throughout the year. I think there's also a fairly large export program on the side of corn and some beans we're starting to see pick up now that China's back in the market a little bit. So I think there's some increased opportunities there around the export side. Where there's some uncertainty, like you mentioned, is around some government policy. And I think that's really going to drive the abilities of a soybean crushing facility or an ethanol plant to create increased margin and get more aggressive again for buying grain. But until we have some more clarification from the federal government on some of those blending standards, you might not see these end users get quite as aggressive until we have some understanding there. So I think there's plenty of opportunities to make money over the next few months as a commercial grain person, but there's also some risks out there that could definitely hurt your bottom line if you're not positioned correctly.
You know, one area that we've lost, I think, some demand, I'm not sure, but you think back to where we were 3-4 years ago, and it's that feeding side. We're at historic tight numbers here in the cattle herd. What are you watching there, and are things starting to change?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I'm a cattle guy at heart. That's what I grew up doing. I have a small herd of Hereford cattle that I've started building up again. So, you know, I think me personally, I'm trying to rebuild a cattle herd. I don't know how many people across the U.S. are. I was watching a sale the other night. There was just some commercial black heifers that sold for $6.25 a pound for 500 weight heifers. But what I noticed from that sale was that it was a breeder, two breeders bidding against each other to bring those heifers back into their herd. So I think we might be getting to the point to where people are throwing in the towel and just saying, hey, I got to rebuild the herd at some point. Let's just start doing it now. So I think if we can continue to see the U.S. cattle producer rebuilding that herd over the long term, we'll see some feed demand come back from that industry. But I still think the cattle cycle, it's not like grains where you plant it in the spring and harvest it in the fall. It's a multi-year cycle that's going to take some time to solve. And I don't think it's a short-term solve over the next 6 months. It's going to be a multi-year problem until we get the cattle herd built back up, especially with everything else going on globally. The screwworm in Mexico, tariffs amongst other countries. We're banning some countries from importing beef. We're encouraging others to import beef. So it's an interesting time in the cattle market. But for me personally, I'm focused on rebuilding the herd because I think that's where the opportunities are going to be over the next few years.
Cody, great to see you. If we want to keep up with what's happening at BarChart, where do we find?
Yeah, you can come look at barchart.com. We also have a very active handle on X. If you just type in BarChart, we've got a handle that posts a lot of really good commodity market information throughout the day. Also, we post some equity information, some federal government standards. We've got close to 500,000 followers on that account. So it puts out some really good information. So I would suggest taking a look there, too.
Cody Gerlach is Director of Strategic Sales Commercial Grain with BarChart. We're in Nashville for the ADM Investor Services event. I'm Tony St. James, and this is the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Craig Turner, Senior Risk Management Consultant with StoneX on canola.
The main producers, buyers of canola, Canada is by far the largest producer of canola. They produce about 30% of the of all canola, but they also export about 60% of the global export market they're responsible for. The biggest buyer is by far China. And they can buy anywhere they average about 6 million metric tons of canola they'll buy from Canada each year, which can be anywhere between 50, 60, 70% of what they're buying from Canada. So yeah, so China being the biggest buyer and Canada for sure being the biggest producer.
But China and Canada trying to reset their relations.
They're the biggest buyer and they're the biggest producer here. It is a big deal, not just for the ag industry in Canada, but there's also global trade flows that it affects, whether it be through Australia, the European Union. So I think it also can, when you take a look at canola, it's a low acid, product compared to the regular rapeseed coming out of Europe. It's kind of the highest, really the highest quality of all the vegetable oils and also the vegetable. It's also for meal. I mean, it is in terms of the crush, canola meal is going to be probably the preferred meal from dairy operations. So when you disrupt this kind of trade flow where you don't have the high quality canola maybe coming either out of Canada or into China, or even you're taking it and dislocating it in the crush process, it has a lot of things that go downstream, whether it be canola meal for dairy or, the industrial side, and specifically to the renewable biodiesel side also. So by the changing the trade flows, it has a lot of a ripple effect in the global economy too.
With China going to Australia, what has this meant?
With China not buying from Canada, they have to make up for about 6 million metric tons of canola from somewhere or a substitute product. Now, before the kind of the tariff wars between China and Canada, I would say China could probably get a little bit under a million metric tons from Australia. Now, because of the issues that they've been having, Australia's bigger production, and they know there's now opportunity to sell to China. A lot of analysts think maybe Australia can make up for 3 million metric tons. Now, to put that in a bigger picture here, I would say China would probably produce 15 or 16 million metric tons a year on their own. They would get the other six that they need from Canada, giving them about 22 million metric tons of what they need. What they've been doing is producing 16 on their own, maybe buy three from Australia. That gets them to 19. So now we've got 3 million metric tons, let's just call it 15% of canola. And do they find other canola around? I mean, India is a producer. There's some smaller producers, like the United States does a little bit, but not nearly as much as Canada. Do you go into Europe and, maybe have a little bit of a lower quality, which in some ways you can, but keep in mind, canola is much more higher quality. And, in terms of these oil seeds, especially in the rapeseed market, where the canola is really meant for human consumption, right? And then high quality feed, while rapeseed when it's crushed, and also the oil is more industrial, or goes into the feed mix, right? So there's only so much you can substitute there. So it does, you know, it does put a little pressure on the outside markets. So they can almost make up for everything, but not enough. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, will China, you know, basically try to find an alternative? Do they, you know, does it put more pressure on them to make a trade deal because they're going to have to get, you know, actually buy from Canada at some point? So it's an interesting point.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
A mixed bag of month-over-month adjustments in various milk production and trade forecast in USDA's January report. According to World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jankanowski,
production changes this month were very small, mainly driven by higher milk per cow, more than offsetting kind of a slowdown in the growth of the herd.
As for dairy trade projections,
we're anticipating continued strength in exports of fat basis products, butter, and to some extent cheese as well. On the other hand, protein-based products, whey, non-fat dry milk. We're seeing pretty strong domestic demand for those products that is keeping more of the product off of the export market.
Those are reflective in dairy product price projections, with lower month-over-month prices for cheese and butter, higher prices during the same period for non-fat dry milk and dry whey. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.